All right. Hello and welcome to Conjecturing a Horrorish Podcast. With me is Laura.
Hello.
And Greg.
Hey, everybody.
And I'm your host, Rob. How's everybody doing tonight?
Super.
Pretty good.
Doing good. We're all here. So we all survived, not just me watching this movie. I think I was at the biggest risk of not being seen again after this movie this week. The fear that was involved. Laura texts me after I watched this in the morning after I watched it, send an emoji of an alien if you're alive, which I thought was kind of like rude to be like, if I am dead, I definitely don't want to send an emoji of an alien. You know, like if I got abducted, I wouldn't want to send the thing that abducted me to you, you know? So I sent like a pancake or something like that. So I lived, you know?
It was perfect.
I feel like that was just as cryptic though. I was like, is that worse? Because the pancake kind of symbolizes like trauma. So I was like, I don't know, maybe Rob's not coming back.
Yeah. We'll get into it in a bit. You know, how I watched this movie and all that stuff and a couple of ideas I had that didn't come to fruition. But yeah, we'll get to that.
Nice.
So let's see what everybody's drinking tonight now. Get that drop going here.
What's in the cups?
All right, so let's start with Laura. She has the most, I think, intricate drink she has. Laura, so what are you drinking?
Yay. So I've made another custom cocktail. I simply am calling this Fire in the Sky. It is red. It has an alien hanging off the side. It's delicious. Just a sparkling red lemon lime gin. It's delicious. Oh, wow.
Is the alien edible?
He is not, but I did wash him. So, you know, if I want to suck on him later, it'll be okay.
I was gonna say the first time you drank it, Laura, the alien was like perfectly aligned with your mouth from the back, so it looked like you were like sucking off the alien as you were sipping on it. So
I mean, if I want to survive, what do I have to do? I don't know.
I guess that's true. so what are you sucking on, Greg?
I googled this thing. It has a long name: cinnamon maple whiskey sour.
Oh. Ooh. Wow. Hmm.
Basically,
wow.
It's Fireball and it's maple syrup with some cinnamon and lemon.
Oh my god.
It is quite honestly the best tasting drink I've made on this podcast.
Wow.
Yeah, you don't even taste any of it, and it's got tons of whiskey in it, so boom.
Wow. That sounds all good. Right. That sounds Cheers. Good. That sounds similar to the drink I created, but I didn't look up a recipe. So like I said, we're doing Fire in the Sky this week. So I was like, okay, what could I possibly use to make a drink? And of course, Fireball was my number one idea. That's something I haven't drank since my wedding years ago. And then the other one I thought is Sky Vodka. So Fire, Sky.
So I did
a 50-50 mix of Fireball and Sky Vodka, and then I did an equal proportion of maple syrup. So
oh my gosh.
But I'm doing it as a shot because I'm not sipping on this all night. I'm not like Laura. I'm not going to sip on the alien all night. So here we go. We got Fireball, Sky Vodka, and maple syrup. Okay. All right.
Cheers, guys.
Okay. That's disgusting. Okay. All right. I don't think that's going to go in our conjecturing drink cocktail book we're going to make.
It'll be honorable mention.
It'll be honorable mention. Yeah, that's true.
Don't try this at home, but it's worth mentioning.
If you want to get fucked up, though, I definitely would do shots of that. Shit.
Gross.
Oh, my God. It has like a thick consistency because the maple syrup. So it's almost like that slime they put in his mouth in this movie.
Ugh.
Ugh.
Mm-hmm. I would have liked to see you drop the fireball like a Jaeger bomb, like fire in the sky.
Ooh. Oh, there you go. I'll do that.
Let's re-record it.
Okay. Yeah. Let me light a fire in my car. Okay. All right. That'll be perfect. So let's get to some updates. We got some listener comments. We have first, we're gonna shout out listener Lindsay, of course, our number one fan. She sent us an email the other day, pretty much just detailing, you know, what she thought of the last couple of pods, you know, talking about Labyrinth, Invitation. Then she had a couple shout outs for Laura and Greg, you know, how that they contribute pretty well. And then I definitely want to shout out the best part of the email, which is mostly directed towards me. So I'll read that one straight here. She's shouting me out because, you know, I create all the questions, the games, the trivia I come up with, you know, that she's so impressed and she's always entertained by listening to you guys play them. You know, she's given me props for being so creative, you know, so thank you. Thank you, Lindsay, for, you know.
All true.
Oh, thank you, Laura. Thank you, Hannah. I appreciate it, you know.
Golf clap.
You know, and then, you know, pretty much she just summarized that, you know, this podcast for her, it gives her fun homework every week to kind of watch a different movie, and it keeps her going. You know, these past couple of months that a lot of people have been in quarantine or stressed out about money or whatever, that it's just kind of like something light that they can listen to. And so she just said, thank you for the dope ass podcast and giving the world something to listen to. So I just wanted to give her a shout out for sending that in. So that was a good little thing, you know. You know, reviews like that definitely, you know, are good for us to hear because it makes us feel that we're doing something beneficial, not just making dick jokes every week. Well, that's my goal, but still, you know. So if anybody wants to email us in or hit us up on Twitter, email is conjecturingpod@gmail.com. And then you got Twitter, Instagram, @conjecturingpod. So you guys can, you know, hit us up there. The only other shout out we really had was we got a shout out on Twitter from the Behind the Screams podcast. And that's @ScreamsBehind. And they were doing kind of a month long thing where they were shouting out other podcasts, just kind of staying to, you know, what we do and how we do it, and we play fun games and stuff like that. So I definitely wanted to give them a shout out. So if you guys want to hit them up on Twitter @ScreamsBehind, you can hit them up, send them a like, or just tell them, you know, thanks for the shout out from us. So that was really cool to hear.
Yay.
Yeah. Do you guys got any follow-up from Midsommar last week? You guys got any follow-up from that one?
Nope.
Oh, I did want to mention about Midsommar that Greg and Laura have been killing on their memes right now. They're creating all these memes for this stuff.
I haven't done anything. That's all Greg.
It's all Greg.
The actress, her facial expressions are so animated. You can write whatever you want from that. She was so expressive.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah,
she's a really good actress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely good. Yeah. Okay, shout out to Greg. Good job, Greg. You're contributing. I like it, you know. All right, so let's get to, you know, definitely the little bit of the movie here. Like we said, we're doing Fire in the Sky. We're doing 1993's Fire in the Sky. This is my movie choice. I picked this movie, like I've talked about from the very beginning of this pod, because this is the movie that started me being afraid of everything. You know, scared the shit out of me when I saw it when I was maybe like 12 years old. And then I stopped watching scary movies for a long time. So this was definitely on my list from the beginning. I think I'm the only one, I was going to say this, I'm the only one sticking to our list still. Laura and Greg are just picking willy-nilly whatever they want now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, we'll see what Greg reveals at the end of this episode, what his movie is going to be next week. But I don't know if it's going to be on his list or not. We'll see.
I hope not.
That's exactly why I've gone off the list.
Don't let Laura bully you, Greg, all right?
It's not just me. He's had other feedback about his list. Don't worry.
I love some of Greg's other picks because I know Laura hates them, so it'll be such a funny pod.
We'll see.
So... So before we get more into the movie a bit, let's get to our horror-ish segment of the week. This week I have... I have a question for you guys this week. So let's see. Question I came up with, you guys, definitely, of course, pertains to aliens. This is an alien abduction movie. So the question I have is, if you had to be abducted by aliens, what alien from pop culture would you choose and why? You know, you could do it from any pop culture, TV, movies, something you read in a comic book.
Are there aliens that abduct for good reasons? that abduct you and then shower you with candy and champagne in space? I don't know if there's any good aliens that you could pick.
That's why this is a tough question.
I know my answer.
Oh, you do? Okay, go first, Laura, while Greg ponders what he can try to get out of this.
It's clearly E.T. E.T. meant no harm at all. And even when the mothership came to pick him up, you know, the mom alien was standing at the front of the spaceship and they were not there to do any harm to any human. So yeah, if I had to get swooped up by someone, it's definitely E.T. and his mom. Mm-hmm. I feel like they'll just fly me around space, let me check out some shit, bring me home. We can share our Skittles or Reese's Ooh. Pieces, whatever
Actually,
that is.
I think they would shower you with candy, wouldn't they?
I know.
They would. They would shower me with candy. Exactly.
She took your answer, Greg.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I didn't even think of that. That's good.
Okay. Do you want me to go next or do you got something?
Go while I ponder this.
Okay, I'll take your second answer, then you'll have even less to choose from. All right, my choice would definitely be the alien from Flight of the Navigator. That spaceship Ooh. And that robot. I mean, it's Paul Rubens doing the voice, so that's kind of cool. I get to hang out with Pee-wee Herman. Not creepy Pee-wee, but you know, he's back now. He's resurrected himself. He's all cleaned up, you know? Yeah, but I mean, I love that movie Flight of the Navigator. It definitely doesn't hold up though. I watched it with my wife and it was not great, but as like a cool alien and like a spaceship, and we get to travel around and he has all those cool little creatures that he's like went and taken them from other planets. That'd be a fucking blast.
Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Greg, what's your third choice? You got a high bar to go from. We got E.T., you got Flight of the Navigator. I don't even know his name. I just call Flight of the Navigator alien. What are you going with, Greg?
Okay, I got it. I'm going to say the aliens from the movie Contact.
Whoa.
I want to be whisked away to another dimension where aliens and humans come together and experience other life forms for the first time. I want the alien to come in the form of a past loved one and like touch my heart with the golden beams of God's voice. That's what I want from this alien. I want them to be totally benign and have a gentle demeanor of peace. That's my answer. Mm. The aliens from
Contact. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. No, that's a great answer.
I mean, you don't get to fly a ship or have candy, but I guess that's pretty cool.
You don't.
But you get to have like an inner peace.
I like it.
I also wanted to do as a counterbalance, what would be the alien you definitely would not want to get abducted by? What's like the worst alien you would not want to get abducted by?
The xenomorphs.
The aliens from Alien?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like you don't wait. So Greg, you don't want like the actual you don't want the xenomorph one to abduct you with its mouth coming out and everything, or you don't want the face hugger?
All of the above. That whole species, man, they got some nasty stuff going on. They'll do all kinds of stuff with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what the Predator is. That a bad one too?
Or like the War of the Worlds one.
Oh, the one Laura hates. Mm-hmm. You don't want to get ground up and then sprayed over the fields.
Yeah.
No. For me, I would definitely say Cocoon. I don't want to see those old ass people. I don't want that, you know? You know, they take off their skin and their creepy balls of light and they go swimming. Nah, I'm good. I'm cool. I'd rather have a face hugger. All right, so let's actually, you know, if anybody wants to email in who they would either want to get abducted by or who they would not want to get abducted by, you can hit us up conjecturingpod@gmail.com. That's always like a fun thing to do, is hearing your guys answers to these stupid questions I come up with. So hit us up, let us know what it is. Maybe one day we'll eventually have a sketchbook. Greg can do sketches of people's ideas. That'll be freaking awesome. All right, so let's get to the movie. So now it's time to jump out of the truck and get to the movie. Let's just be stupid and naive and run out of a truck like a fucking moron.
I don't know. It's something Greg would do.
I know. Like we're not even into the movie yet, but I'll just put it on you guys. Would either of you guys fucking see a fucking spaceship and be like, oh, let me get fucking closer?
I feel like Greg, I think you would. I'm not saying you're stupid at all. I just think you're a very curious person.
I'd be the first to die. Yeah, there's no question, though.
Oh no. Yeah, and me and Laura aren't coming back for you. We're taking off. We're out of there, man. Sorry. So like we said, the movie we're doing is Fire in the Sky, 1993 movie. Director is Robert Lieberman. And I guess Laura put on here he directed Mighty Ducks 3. Oh, I didn't know. That's pretty cool.
D3.
Wait, D3 was the USA one, right? Or is that D2?
I don't have a fucking
clue. Because there's the original, then there's, oh, is it the original? And then it's the USA team, and then they went to college, right?
I don't know, but doesn't everyone love D3?
whatever was the one where they're on the USA team. That's the fucking best one.
That was because it had like the most ensemble cast. They like brought back people who were missing from part two and brought back everyone from part one. Just such a golden movie.
Yeah, let's just talk about D2. Let's just talk about let's talk about Mighty Ducks.
No.
The rest of the pod. We don't need to talk about aliens. We'll just talk about Mighty Ducks the whole time. All right. Okay. I know you guys aren't going to let me get off that easy. All right. So this this movie's budget was $15 million. Box office was 19.9. So it didn't really make a lot of money. It made, you know, its money back. And then Lord, you want to talk about some interesting facts you found?
Yeah. Film is based on the book called Walton Experience, which was actually written by Travis Walton. And in the book, Walton tells of how he was actually abducted by a UFO. So obviously that's up to all of us to interpret if it was real or not. And the real Travis Walton actually make a cameo in this movie. And I had to look up which scene it was. And it's the scene where all of the townspeople are together. I think they're in like a church or a community center. And they're discussing what to do about Travis's disappearance. And then another fun fact I found rewatching this movie is Henry Thomas. He is the main little boy, Elliot, in E.T.
That's right.
And now here he is, one of the friends. I forget which friend he was. He's like he was the really young one that's in the truck with them.
So cool.
The good hair. That's Elliot from E.T.
You know that, I don't know, maybe he won the part based on acting, but that had to have given him a boost.
No, he definitely got it because of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And then the only other thing we have in here is director's reason for making the movie. Laura texts me on the side chain about this. She literally put, I searched around but couldn't find anything about why the director made this movie. And then I text her back and just said, because it shouldn't have been made.
Mic drop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like she talked about, you know, it's not like a star-studded cast, but definitely I recognize almost everybody in this movie. You got D.B. Sweeney, Robert Patrick from The Faculty. Wow, that's pretty cool seeing him again in our pod. You got James Gardner, like I said, Henry Thomas, you got Peter Berg, Craig Schaefer. Like I said, all the main guys in this movie, I recognize them from something. They're not all, none of them are just A-list actors, but I definitely recognize everybody, which is kind of cool. Yeah. Do you want to do synopsis, Laura?
Yeah. So again, this movie is very loosely based on true events that happened to the real Travis Walton. One day he is driving back from work with four other of his buddies late at night in the woods. And they see something that resembles a fire in the sky. So his dumb ass decides to get out of the car to investigate, and he ends up getting abducted. And his friends immediately tell the police, and of course, no one believes them. And they even actually think that his best friend has something to do with his disappearance. Luckily, Travis comes back about 5 days later and has no memory of what happened to him. And then it takes a very strange scene where he's under a table and syrup gets knocked over, and that syrup to drip into his mouth for all the memories of his abduction to come back. It's truly haunting.
Exactly.
To Rob.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. While I watched this movie, I was eating waffles and syrup.
That's so good.
Just to try to help myself relax a bit, you know, try to ease my way through this movie a bit. I wasn't underneath the table or anything, but you know, it was pretty good. Waffles were good. That was good. So like we talked about, I definitely saw this and it scarred me. I'm pretty sure Greg, you said you saw this little too and you thought it was creepy, right?
Yeah. I thought it was really, really scary.
Mm-hmm. And Laura, I don't remember. Have you seen this before?
Yeah, I have seen it.
How old were you when you saw it?
I have no idea. It was one of those movies I saw on TV, like here and there, bits and pieces, maybe.
Not when you were like...
I don't even know if I've seen it. I don't think I saw it as a kid, no.
All right, okay.
Very different.
Mm-hmm. Very different. Okay, all right. Yes, who wants to get into a little bit of the movie here? I mean...
Kick it off. Let's hear it.
Wait, first of all, what was it like, Rob, just watching that first scene? Was it like the memory of watching this and being like, this is the movie that fucked me up?
I was definitely anxious and nervous. You know, in my apartment, we have like a balcony. I'm on the second floor. So it's nighttime and I can kind of see out on the balcony. So in the apartment, though, is when the living room lights are on, it makes a glare on the slider glass. So you can't see out. So I can't see if there's something on my balcony. So I would periodically, as this movie would be going on, turn off the light so I could visually see out of the balcony, make sure there's nothing standing there. Because I would just, every like, you know, once a bit in this movie, I would just get that weird vibe of like, oh, like where you get the chills, do you feel like somebody's kind of like watching you from somewhere? So I'd have to make sure turn off the light and make sure there's nobody like standing on the balcony or fucking some shit like that, you know? So I definitely, from the beginning of this movie, was eerie, was definitely anxious because I hadn't watched it in so long. I just didn't realize it was going to take fucking an hour and 20 minutes to get to the part that I'm scared of. Because all I remember from this movie is the worst part in this movie, you know?
Right.
For being an alien abduction movie, you really only see the aliens for 5 minutes. And then, like, that's it. It's really about their family, you know, these two friends and the group. And it's almost like a whodunit, you know? It's like, because if you were seeing this fresh and you never saw this movie before and you didn't know any backstory, you would be questioning, did this really happen or did they kill this guy? It's almost like a murder mystery in the beginning. But the fact that we all kind of know what's going on, it's kind of very slow paced in the beginning then. And you're just waiting for the alien stuff to happen. I just, in my memory of this movie, I thought it was like 50% aliens and 50% setup. I didn't realize it was until the very end. So I'm just sitting there being like, wow, this is a pretty long movie to not really get a lot of aliens in it, you know?
Yeah.
So that was one thing I was kind of like disappointed because I just didn't remember that. All I remember is, of course, the horrific worst scene ever, you know?
Yeah.
Because did you guys kind of feel the same way, like, watching this, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I was surprised, too. You don't get to see the aliens till like, an hour and some change into the movie. And I thought, I was like you. Like, I thought this was, like, half and half. Half aliens. But, you know, what it is when you watch it so many years ago, that's the thing that sticks out to you. Now, whether it was a good decision to do that, I don't know. I kind of liked it. It was interesting because you get a little bit of it in the beginning because you see him get, you know, you see Travis walk over to this UFO because he's a genius and he gets under it and it kind of hits him with the light, knocks him on his feet, and then they drive away and it, you know, allegedly just takes him into space. And then nothing. And then the rest of it is, well, what happened to your friend? Oh, well, this is what happened. And no one believes them, of course. And you're left thinking, this was actually like probably the thing I liked about the movie the most was like the tension of wondering if it was actually all made up. They had, like you said, if you hadn't seen this movie before, there are so many scenes where they show you the UFO picking him up. And so in your mind, you're thinking, oh, well, clearly aliens got him.
Yeah.
But then there are so many scenes after that that make you think, oh, is this movie fucking with me? Was that memory just fabricated and they're really covering up like a murder? So like that's what I thought. Like when they got to the bar, they drove away from the scene and they kind of have this like sheriff, like he's kind of a hot shot sheriff, like a Tommy Lee Jones from The Fugitive comes into town. He's got like a million cases under his belt and he's like, I'm going to solve this one. And he sees a National Enquirer or like a tabloid magazine in their truck and he thinks, oh, okay, well, this is where they got the idea. They're hiding something, you know? And then even when they get into the bar, they're all like yelling at each other, like, okay, guys, they're clearly like anxious. And they say to each other, okay, well, we're going to stick to the story. We're going to stick to the story. And it just sounds like something that people who are covering up a murder tell each other to keep their stories consistent so that they don't, like, one doesn't rat out the other and they get convicted. And then the scene after that where the guy with the glasses, he's like in a church and he's like praying and he goes, Father, forgive us for what we've done. And so they're building up all these small moments that make you actually question what you saw. They're continually, you know, there's that search party that goes out looking for Travis and they don't find anything. And there's like a burial site and they think, oh, okay, now we've got him. Let's dig it up. But it's just like animal bones. And I don't know if you guys thought this was an effective device or maybe you were just convinced by the scene where he got taken up by the UFO to think that, okay, they're not crazy. They're actually telling the truth. But I actually thought, well, this could be one of those movies where they mess with us. Like, even though we saw what we saw, maybe that's just like the story they're telling us. Or just the fact that it allows us to question the possibility or give us the credible doubt. I thought that was really cool. So I thought that was so effective.
Hmm. Interesting.
So what about you, Laura?
You know, this is definitely a typical 90s movie, which I have a soft spot for most of the time. I love that it has a very like simple, small town feel. I think that makes the few alien scenes even more powerful in a way, because it's just such a drastic like scene and movie change compared to the movie that you've been watching. Although I didn't think the movie like overall is that great. I mean, it is what it is. Like I have to agree with some of those reviews out there. The actual alien abduction scenes and like torture scenes, although only last, 10 minutes total in the whole movie, if at all, are so badass. I mean, it truly is some of the best I've seen. And I've seen some really great alien movies. So even though, yes, I get it, I wish I saw more of them. I also think that only by showing 10 minutes made it super effective. So I was really happy with that choice. And unlike Greg, again, I think this is one of those situations where Greg is like almost too smart when he reviews some of these movies. Like you think of things that are just smarter than what the director set out to do. The director is just like, here's the movie. This is what I'm doing. So I, of course, never once questioned the alien story. I was like super on board. And you guys know me, I get very passionate about certain things. I found this movie infuriating because obviously I saw with my own eyes, he got abducted by aliens. I knew that was the story. And I thought the setup showing him and his friend Mike, I mean, his friend Mike was such a good guy. And it infuriated me, this whole movie. It just seemed like everyone was so horrible to poor Mike, who's just this great guy. He's a great friend.
Are you grinding your gears right now?
No. Oh. I have worse ones than this.
So you're just angry. Okay. All right. Just checking.
I'm just angry. He's such a good guy. Yeah. Like everyone is so, his wife. Oh, it was a toss up if she should have been in my grinding gears, but nope, I'll save it. She is the worst wife ever. He is such a nice guy. She is Satan. And everyone in the town, you know, everyone seemed to go from respecting him and liking him. And he's just this great guy to everyone's like, you killed your friend. Really? Based off of what? I don't know. It was just very hard for me to watch that.
Yeah. No, I agree. Definitely the 180 of, establishing Mike as like a good guy and a good friend and, you know, just trying to get by and do what he can do with his family and stuff like that. And for the wife and all the townsfolk just to flip 180 on him so quickly, you know,
what would you do though? Like, that's a hard story to defend. If you were a townsperson in, you know, random, you know, city in the mountains of Arizona, and you hear that someone went missing, and then people say an alien abducted him, like, what's your reaction going to be?
Oh, you know what? As a wife, I love my husband. If I, up until this point, feel that he has been of sound mind, and he said, you know, and take one of his best friends who I know he would never do anything to, and he told me and three other witnesses saw this happen. This is what happened. In my head, I'd probably be thinking, well, you thought you saw that? Sure, that could be a concern. But would I then jump and be like, this man, you know, is a murderer and he's lying to me all of a sudden and he killed his best friend and my best friend? No, I would never think that. It's just horrid.
Yeah.
She's a horrid character. This town is full of horrid people and they're all very close-minded.
Yeah, that scene where it's Mike and his wife and they're in the bedroom and he's pretty much asking her like, you believe me, right? Like, you believe me. And she kind of like just doesn't answer, pretty much like, you know, like a no means she doesn't believe. She didn't say it, but she just kind of like gives him a look. And I was like, you know, how do you not believe him? Like, like, come on, that's crazy. You know,
she also was yelling at him from the first scene in the movie. Yeah. I mean, she's just a horrid person.
Oh, that's true. Their marriage was not at a great place to begin with. So maybe that has something to do with the fact that she's just like, I really don't give a shit, you know? And maybe if they were maybe if they had a really strong relationship, she definitely would be like, you know, oh, of course I believe you. But right now she's like, no, you can't pay the bills, so I don't trust you. Yeah. Let's talk about a little bit of the music in this movie. I really liked the what do you want to call it? What do you call it, Greg? You're the music guy here. It's like the tone, like it like makes like a noise every time it's like suspense tone they kept playing throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Definitely in the first half of the movie while they were searching or things were happening, there was like a tone they kept playing that I thought was really effective. But I really liked that. There was other times where they played music that I thought was just weird. I mean, like Laura said, it's the 90s, so I think the music they played when they did the montage scene where they're all cutting the lumber, I thought that music was a little too like upbeat for the movie.
Yeah.
I liked it.
You liked it? Oh my God.
I'm so weird with the 90s, man.
And the only time I think I really noticed music was when they were started doing the search party scene. They had another like music in there. It was another one where I just felt weird. I was just like, I'd rather there was no music. What did you guys think of like the music throughout or any of the tones?
In the beginning, I one thing I do recall is that the music was eerie, and then like at the end of the, I don't know what you would even call it, the music line, it would have a weird sound, and I thought that was really like cheesy. It'd be like, quack, 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 quack. And like, I don't know, that little end bit was like, I think kind of weird for me, but overall it was pretty good. I actually didn't pick up on just the background music at all, you know, like throughout the movie. This, like you said, this seems like to be one of those movies where the absence of music is probably going to be like what's effective, especially when you're seeing him on the ship. Like that's where it's like, okay, you don't want to hear anything. You just want to, you know, like feel the sounds rather than hear like music.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely like we talked about already, you know, the premise, you know, of this movie is, you know, did he get abducted by aliens or did these guys kill him? And there's a guy on the crew, his name is Dallas. And he's like the main guy that you would suspect would kill him. They had beef with each other. They didn't like each other. There's a scene where Dallas puts a chainsaw like right up to his face and everything. And Dallas has a criminal background and he's the you know, bad guy and all that. So he's definitely the one you would think would possibly kill him. So I thought Dallas was an interesting character. Pretty good acting. You know, I don't know. How'd you guys feel about acting overall from everybody?
I think it was pretty typical 90s acting. I'll say that. Like nothing was terrible, but I think that if I compared it to, like, for example, comparing it to Midsommar, which we watched last week, it's not the same.
Yeah. I thought that the best like scene of acting was when they're like all the buddies or lumberjacks, they're in the truck and watching Travis get closer to this UFO and they're like freaking the fuck out, like they're and they book it like, and I thought that was so realistic, and it made me remember like one of these times where like back in high school, like some of us friends would just go to like random like places, like old boarded up, like, you know, abandoned hospitals and psychiatric wards, like mountains that were like off limits, and we would like go check it out and just see what's there, right? And I remember there was one time we were coming down off of this like mountain, and like we heard this really weird noise like off in the distance, like 30 feet, and we thought you would think a bunch of dudes going up a mountain were like tough and cool. The moment we heard that, everybody was like, all for every man for themselves, running down the fucking as fast as you can. You panic. All you do want to do is run and get away from the threat. So like watching the scene where they're like, go, 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 go. He's dead. Like he's not dead. He like fell on the ground. Like why would he be dead? And they just left him there. But like, it's so real. And their reaction, even Dallas, like you said, he's the tough guy, Rob. He like rolls up his window.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aliens, and like they leave, and I thought like the panic of that scene, the sense of it was so real to me. I thought that was the best acted scene.
Are you sure, Greg, you didn't get abducted? You sure?
I might just be an alien. Maybe they sent an alien back in my place. I don't know.
Maybe we need to pour some syrup on your head and see if you have a flashback.
See, going back to the Dallas character, this is why I'm so upset. He's the only one that really had a reason or a desire, let's say, to potentially kill this guy, no one ever thinks he did it. Everyone's just pointing their fingers at Mike because he's what, the boss?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he's the leader. You honestly, when it comes to conspiracies, you look at who, or supposed conspiracies, you look at who you think is the ringleader, who's orchestrating the whole thing. So they kept deferring to him in the bar, like, oh, he's our fearless leader, because he's, and technically he is, he looks to be like the foreman of the group, and he's telling them, you know, the crew, what trees to cut down and how, and when they act up, he says, he puts them in their place and they listen to him. And I think he's kind of the one who is running the contract. So technically he is. So unfortunately, in a situation where people are suspicious and hysterical of your motives, the person who's like at the focal point is going to be the leader, which is sad, because you're right, Laura. He's the nicest, loyalist guy in this movie, which is, in fact, it seems like they spent most of the time in this movie on him and what he's gone through. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He definitely has the scene where after Travis gets, you know, whatever it's called, shocked with the lighter or whatever, and falls on the ground, that all the guys, of course, scream, let's get out of here. They drive away. And then he stops. Mike stops and he's like, I got to go back. We left him. You know, I can't leave him. You know, he finally comes to, like, you know, clarity. And then all the guys are like, all right, fuck it. You know, if you don't want to go, then get out. So everybody gets out and then Mike goes back to search for him. So, like, that just goes back, you said, to Mike's character. You know, he definitely had a lapse in judgment. He's scared. People are yelling at him to let's get the fuck out of here. And he left, but he caught himself and went back. He's not a bad guy at all. I mean, pretty much, you know, most of this story now, like I said, it is just the, you know, did they, didn't they, until Travis comes back, of course. You know, the townsfolk fucking think they all did it. Nobody believes them. And then at the time, this is what, 1975, this movie took place, that you have a coming of age technology called a lie detector that at that time was actually a very strong case you could use in a court system. I don't think that's the case anymore, but
no.
You know, at this time, this was something you could use in the court to say, like, is somebody truthful or not? So, and I completely forgot about this whole scene. So when they did the lie detector, I was like, oh, this is cool. You know, this is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think of the lie detector stuff?
Yeah, I thought it was a good scene, especially tying it in at the end. You know, at the end, they give a little synopsis on the screen about what's happening with everyone, just briefly, and it does say how a handful of them retook it years later and how they all came back passing with flying colors. So I think tying it in with that at the end made that scene even more worthwhile.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was really good too. To me, you have five people who were asked the same questions, and I think maybe one, Dallas, was the wild card because he just didn't give a shit and probably answered them all weird. But if they were all consistent, especially at the time when I don't think, you know, many people knew how to, like, fool with a polygraph test, I thought that was just very compelling. I mean, that's good enough for me. You tell me that five people passed the test in 1970 something, that tells me that at least they all believed that they saw something. So I don't know. It just seems very compelling. And I do remember watching that as a kid. And, like, again, this was the early 90s. Back then, you thought it was as good as gold. If you took a lie detector test and you passed it, it was like, okay, well, what you just said was gospel truth. So especially at that time, I thought, wow, you know, this is, they say it's based on the true story, but it literally is a true story because that checks out. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's like, wow, that's tough.
Yeah. Yes. You have something, Laura?
I really want to talk about something else that really upset me about this movie. I wanted to see if you guys agree. Yeah.
Wait, are we grinding your gears again? Is this?
No, I'm still not goodness, there. Wow. I'm still not there. I'm saving.
You're just very irritated.
Mm-hmm. I am. I'm saving that. I have a list, and that's the one that
I want to hear what your guys' thought is on what I actually thought was the most striking scene from my memory, and that's when Mike gets a call from Travis in the middle of the night, you know, 5 days later, from like a collect call from a payphone in the middle of nowhere. And and it's Travis saying, like, I need help. His voice is all weird. Come pick me up. When they go drive to where they think the payphone is, he's naked and he's all damaged. And he looks like he's been, you know, roughed up, and he's clearly mentally not there. So that was such a crazy scene.
I gotta open my beer. this one. Okay. All right. Travis comes back. As Greg said, he is naked. He is traumatized. He is shaking. He's been through an ordeal. He has no memory. He has wounds. He's been in the hospital. He gets picked up that next morning. He's clearly still so fucking traumatized. He's not talking. And then he gets driven home where they have thrown a party for him. Are you fucking kidding me? This poor man. That's why he hides under a table. That's why he hides under a table. And that's why syrup drips in his mouth, because who are these people? You know what? And then, of course, Mike wasn't there. Well, I'll tell you what. If Mike was there, he wouldn't have let that happen. He would have been like, my buddy fucking needs a minute to, you know, collect himself. We're not throwing a party. Ugh.
So that got you, Laura? Mm-hmm.
The wife did it. I know it.
Oh, Mike's wife? Mike's wife?
Yeah. Yep. She was like in charge of the food and the catering. And yeah, it's bullshit.
That's the thing. They didn't even know what actually had happened because he was too traumatized to tell the story. So until you know what happened, why do you even let him talk to anybody?
Let's just throw a party. So great.
Like I sort of took that as like, I bet you a lot of them supported the party because several of the friends were almost like wanted for murder, you know, based on the suspicion of Townsend. They were probably happy to hear their names clear of charge. So they're like, yeah, let's get it all together. And then also, of course, their friend is still alive. But like before anything has been established, why do you – I definitely put that in my notes too, Laura. I'm so with you. It's like, you know, he's clearly traumatized. Why do you have a crowded welcome home party? WTF.
He was barely speaking. And you're going to throw a party for someone? Oh, okay. That's great. Just send him right back to the insane asylum. That's just fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, going back to what Greg talked about in the phone booth, that's when you're starting to get into the first things that are starting to freak me out a bit. For me, it was the point where he screamed. He has that guttural scream where it's so primal and so fear-based that... Oh man, when he did those two screens, that's when I started turning my light on and off and making sure there's nothing at my window. Cause I was like, oh shit. Cause that scene is really creepy to me. His scream. And then when he's in the bathroom and he looks up at the window and there's like the marking on the window of like fingerprints.
I don't mean to cut you off. I just want to add to that and say, like, I think a big reason why that scream was so powerful is because the whole movie, isn't he like the most happy-go-lucky guy? He's the one that like brings, you know, life and joy. He's riding his bike, picking up donuts without even looking, you know, he meets his friend, he's talking with everybody. And then to go from that to like this huddled mass, you know, on the sidewalk screaming that shriek. It's such a polarizing moment. If it were like Dallas or somebody else, it probably wouldn't have that same effect. But the fact that it's like the guy that's bringing life and joy to this movie is just, it really fucks you up.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, definitely, even watching this, like, as an adult, I'm with you, Rob. That scene really got me too.
Yeah, you definitely have to give it up for D.B. Sweeney in this movie, playing those two opposite, pretty much opposite characters, where he's, like Greg said, happy and jovial and laughing and always smiling to being, like, no emotion. And, you know, like, his face looked completely different. Mm-hmm. Definitely a great acting job by him in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, beyond that, you're pretty much too... You know, the first scenes of Aliens here, you know, the syrup goes on the head and that triggers his PTSD to come back and he starts getting flashbacks. And that's when I start getting nervous. And
yeah, you know, about to say, how did you, like, we'll get to what he experiences, but what did you experience in that moment?
Well, I already ate my waffles. I finished my waffles in like 10 minutes. So that my waffles are done already. So that sucked. So, like I said, that first guttural scream happens, I'm already like getting nervous, you know. Then the syrup scene happens and I'm like, fuck, you know, watching this, like, luckily, like, of course I know what's going to happen, cause of course I've seen this before, but it still was not enjoyable. I mean, I liked, you know, for being nervous and scared and anxious through all the alien stuff, I have to give them credit for those practical effects. Everything was textile. Everything was real. There was no CGI in this. Mm-hmm. You know, pretty much he has a flashback. He wakes up inside a cocoon of goo. He wakes up in there. He, you know, pops it open. And then he's in like this giant cavern of, it almost looks like beehive-ish, where, you know, a bunch of like parts where they would put people, you know, and then he kind of falls out and realizes that there's no gravity. So he's floating. Then he climbs his way to the top and he peeks over and you start seeing the first images of the aliens, which you think are aliens at the time, you know, and they look like the typical aliens you see, you know, the gray aliens with the big heads and the big eyes and little skinny legs, like the typical aliens you would see. You know, it's not till he falls down there that he looks at them and you realize they're suits, which I thought was fucking so genius.
Yeah.
To be like, man, that's why, like we said from the beginning, this is like, I think the most realistic alien movie ever made, because they really did a great job of being like, this is what people normally think they look like, but inside there's something else. That's fucking genius. And it makes so much sense.
Yeah, I mean, we have spacesuits. Why wouldn't they?
Exactly. You know, So he's looking in the spacesuits. It's pretty funny that he's kind of like, he's like, wow, this is cool spacesuits, you know? And then you have like the first, I think another good jump scare was the spacesuit behind him in the background moves. And now another scene I completely forgot. And another scene that was like, oh, fuck. You know, I was like, no, Travis, look out. You know, I'm like yelling at my TV. I think my wife texts me, was like, keep it down there, you know. Then, you know, he turns the spacesuit around, you could see the kind of the inside, and then next thing you know, the alien grabs his shoulder and then he kind of flings his arm back and hits the alien, and then he starts running. And then you guys want to take it from there, one of you guys?
Dude, I mean, that scene was Yeah, the whole alien scene, where they, you know, they've been giving you like tidbits of flashbacks up until this point. That obviously looked really cool. It looks like he's on some kind of stretcher getting wheeled and he's just seeing like the lights pass by, right? And then they finally show you what happens when the aliens do grab him, and you start to look at them and yeah, they're just like fucked up. I see, I don't remember that part of it, and it's totally true. They are so fucked up. They're like orangey brown and they have these super grumpy faces, but they're not cute grumpy.
No.
They're like scary grumpy. And yeah, I just feel like the whole scene where they put that sheet on him.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. And it's almost like spray him down with milk. I don't really know. And then and it's all happening so fast. So it's like they've either done this before or know what they're doing. I don't know. But they like open one eye hole, open his mouth hole. And then sure enough, here comes this giant machine that's going to stick something in his mouth, jab something in his eye, and basically torture him. And what I'm assuming is do tests to just understand his race and species. And yeah, I don't know. Okay. It definitely was shocking. I mean, I watched this movie during the day and I wasn't scared, but again, I'll say, I think this is one of the coolest, like alien and alien abduction movies I've seen just in those 10 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I love the scene where they're dragging him through like their hallway, whatever you want to call it, their tunnel, and all the debris from people is on the sides of the hallway.
Yeah.
And he's trying to grab for things. There's like sneakers and glasses and books and just whatever people have had on their hands or whatever's falling off. That's, to me, is just such like a crazy thing to put there, because that really shows you that he's not the first. Like there has been, you know, thousands of people that have been through this and have had this experience in this movie, that it just puts a big perspective on it. It makes it even more real to me.
Yeah. I thought what was so effective about all of these scenes inside the ship, like on one hand, it looks so advanced, like, you know, we could never achieve anti-gravity. You know, the machines that they used to kind of probe him looked advanced, but at the same time, they looked like crude and dirty.
Mm-hmm.
The aliens actually kind of look humanoid, you know. Yeah. There's different like types of aliens in different movies, but these kind of look humanoid, which makes you think they have a weird interest in humans. Like Rob said, they have like debris and artifacts of like humans. So like, but the thing that like really got me was the fact that they were just so emotionless about him being on the experimentation table. Like, he was screaming and kicking and fighting, and they were scrawny looking, but they were also strong.
Oh yeah, they just like ripped off his pants and underwear like nothing.
Yeah, like mm-hmm. they just showed that, you know, a nice bright hiney like with nothing, you know, and they dragged him to the hallway, and he was probably like a 200 pound guy, and like he was kicking and moving, he couldn't do anything. He was screaming at the top of his lungs, and they could care less. To me, it was like looking at like a human scientist dissecting a plant. Mm. You know, it's like, well, we're just opening it up and like looking at it and testing. Well, we don't even think of it as something that has emotion or has feelings or experiences pain. So they were doing that, and I thought that their faces of the fact that they were just doing this for, like, I don't know, like you said, lower educational purposes or informational purposes, I don't know, was so haunting because they were so unaffected by that. This was clearly, right, guys, like the scariest, you know, the creepiest part of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
By far. I mean, I'm glad they didn't like do the typical like butt probe or anything like that, because that wouldn't have been great, you know. Yeah, I mean, they had the lube, they could have done it if they wanted to, but yeah, I'm glad they didn't. You know? I know. I've been meaning to ask you guys: do you guys believe in aliens?
I definitely believe that there is another form of life out there, and it's just something that is so far away and so impossible to get to, and I don't know. We'll see, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like the universe is so, I think even though we have people who have quantified how big the universe is, billions of light years, and what you even think that means. And, you know, you can look up videos on YouTube that try to scale it for you. Knowing how large it is, you know, I'm in the camp that says, well, it's pretty much, I think it's impossible that there is, we're the only ones in this entire, you know, universe.
I agree.
I don't know. I mean, haven't there been videos that show the U.S. Navy flying around and seeing unidentified flying objects? That's been officially released. And then basically their answer is we have
no. Oh, yeah.
They just did that this year. They released a bunch of stuff the government did of saying like, hey, like we're releasing this stuff. It's real, you know?
I mean, look at that. I mean, you begin to question.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely a fucking believer. I'm Mulder Scully from the X-Files. I'm fucking Mulder, you know. I believe in everything, you know. Especially after seeing this movie when I was young, I definitely fucking believed for most of my fucking life. I still believe now, you know. There was definitely points in my life where I thought I was abducted by aliens, you know. There's a funny story that at some point, I would say probably in my, man, this is really embarrassing, but I would say when I was probably in my like mid-20s, that I would wake up in the morning and I would like have these red marks on my shoulders, like in my like shoulder collarbone area. They would be like three marks on each shoulder. And I would be like, what the fuck is, like, why? Am I like getting abducted at night? Like, are these like skin scars? Are they implanting things into me? Like, I was freaked out for months, you know? Come to find out later that when I go to the gym and I do squats, the seams on my shirt would put indents into my shoulders and it would leave marks.
Oh my God.
So I've always been the guy that, you know, there's like that phrase where it's like, if somebody shows you a picture and they call out like a duck, that you can only see that duck, you'll never not see the duck once you know about it.
Mm-hmm.
From a young age, I was told aliens are going to get you. So I'm always on the lookout of like, did I get abducted? Am I getting abducted? So I have that mindset and I have that sight of like, oh my God, something's going to try to get me. You know, I mean, luckily I live in like a metropolitan area where I don't think a lot of it really happens. It's always in a rural area. So at least I'm less nervous. But every time, like Greg, I would go camping with my dad or something like that. He liked to camp a lot. I would be fucking freaked the shit.
Yeah. What is it about camping that makes you scared of like aliens? I can tell you guys, I believe that there is something out there. Am I afraid of it though? Not really, because I think I believe that I'm never going to see it. It's never going to affect me. That's just what I think. And watching movies with aliens does not scare me for some reason. But I will admit, every time I've gone camping, that's all I think about. It's like, oh shit, if you're going to get abducted, it's right here, right now.
I agree. Yeah. And if there's any aliens listening to this podcast, our transmission went out there somehow. I just want to say, like, we're cool. You know, if you come, definitely take Laura because she's down for it, I guess. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We forgot to mention that we're wearing outfits again this week. Me and Greg are just wearing flannels. We got some flannel lumberjack shirts on. Greg has a weed whacker. He's chopping down little baby trees. And then we got Laura. Laura went all out. She has antennas. She has antennas that have balls on them, which she's been playing with throughout the pod. And then she has these alien glasses that don't really fit her well, but they look pretty creepy. And then she has her little alien man, little green alien.
He's dancing. I'll post a pic.
So let's get back to the movie here a bit. Travis is back. These guys aren't in trouble anymore. The main cop sheriff, Tommy Lee Jones cop, is like, when they slip up, I'll be here. You know, that whole stupid story. Like he feels like it's just they all wanted publicity. And then I forgot the ending of this movie that it like jumps 2 years.
Yeah.
Which I was kind of like, oh, like, to be honest with you, I really didn't like the ending of this movie.
No, me neither.
Yeah, for a movie that's built on like suspense and like a whodunit and what happened and then scary ass alien shit, it tries to end like super like heartfelt and happy. And I was like, it didn't feel right. It felt so out of place.
Oh, I didn't think it was so heartfelt and happy.
You didn't?
I thought it was insane that after insane. Mike had to endure just everyone hating on him and being married to Satan herself, like, does he get to see his kids? Probably not, because he hasn't seen his best friend and his wife and new baby and baby on the way. So clearly this guy has just been completely like his town. Just it didn't matter what came to light and who believed what. It's like they completely just fucked Mike over. And in the end, he just lives by himself. And I just thought that was so sad. And I get that it's very nice that after 2 years, they kind of apologized to each other. They did get into a scuffle, right? So Mike got mad at him for getting out of the car. He got mad at Mike for leaving him briefly, even though Mike did come back. But yes, he did leave. You know, he was very freaked out in that moment. And it's like, I just can't believe that they went 2 years without talking. And sure that they're buddies now, but yeah, it just didn't do it for me. I was like, this guy's gone through so much this movie. I'm not even talking about the guy who was abducted. I'm talking about Mike. He was my favorite.
I know. I feel like this movie should have just been called Mike. It was really the movie of Mike, really. It's about his story. And he didn't have a very good ending. You know, he lost his wife, kids, respect. He lost his best friend. He lost everything in this movie. Yeah. You know? Yeah,
he was such a good guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but I don't know. Like you said, I just didn't like the ending where, you know, they apologize to each other, and that's fine. That was okay. I just didn't like the whole last sentence where Travis is like, "Oh, I don't think they like me," you know.
Well, also, what does that even mean? Does that mean you're like the only person they've ever given back?
Yeah.
Did they find something about you? Like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, it was just like a dumb line. All he really did to get on their nerves was like he hit one by accident with his hand, and then they pretty much just abused the shit out of him. So I don't know how he got any type of upper hand on them at all to be like, they don't like me.
Is that kind of like what you do when you're in a, like, say you're in a shark attack and you survive, right? Isn't that like maybe how you joke with other people? You go, oh, hey, they didn't like how I tasted. Ha ha ha. Like, that's like your way of kind of like laughing off this incredibly traumatic experience. Like, maybe
that's a very good point.
Look, he came back and like, what was the most that happened? It was weird and traumatizing, but he clearly didn't eat or drink for 5 days. So he was famished. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he was just naked. I mean, maybe they didn't like his fashion style. Like, they took away his clothes. They didn't really actually didn't break any bones. They didn't like suck his blood dry like in the movies. So I don't know. Maybe they didn't really do much to him. So he's probably thinking, they messed with me. They took me away for a couple of days, you know, and not much happened.
Yeah, that's a good point. I just kind of took it as like he had a lot of fight in him, and maybe they were like, whatever, you know, maybe a lot, all those other quote unquote dead people that were in those weird beehive cocoons of goo. Maybe it was just like they gave up or didn't fight hard enough.
Yeah, that's what I thought too, Laura. I thought that's the way I took it at. And I was like, you didn't fight.
You screamed a few times. Yeah.
You got dominated. You didn't do anything right. Sorry, buddy. You know?
Oh, well, when I was doing my research on this, apparently the real Travis Walton, even though he like signed off on them making this into a movie and had a cameo, I guess this does not describe his experience very accurately. And they are planning to eventually make a movie much more related to what's actually in his book being abducted.
Do you want to hear the actual events? Because that's my diggings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's. I'm gonna take over the diggings this week. Greg kind of titled it "Grave Robbing," so I'm gonna dig up
robbing the graves.
So I'm gonna dig up graves and steal his coffin for a bit. You know. You don't get to talk, Greg. So get out of here, Graves. It's my turn right now. All right. Go chill in the corner. Okay. Damn. Go eat some syrup. So, so pretty much after watching this movie, I definitely was freaked out. Of course, I didn't like the ending, so I was kind of irritated, but I was watching this on Amazon Prime. And one of the options it gave me was a documentary called Travis. And this is a documentary from 2016. Was about the actual effect, the actual occurrence in this movie. It was a really good documentary. So if anybody wants to look it up, it's just called Travis, the Travis Walton story from 2016. And so the main difference in the documentary to the movie is his actual experience from on the spaceship. It's so crazy. So he definitely gets taken. Of course, he gets zapped and all that, you know. But when he wakes up, he wakes up on the table for one. And he described them as kind of grayish aliens. Not really like fucked up like these ones, more like the suit style. He said they definitely weren't very humanoid looking. And he said he reached for like a scalpel that was there and he got up and like tried to cut one and then started running. And he said he ran down a corridor until he came into like a control room that had like control panels and like a big chair. And he said he looked up and he could like see the space. He could see the stars and planets. And so it was almost like translucent above him. And then he said that a person came into the control room that looked like a human. It was humanoid looking and it had a space helmet on. And he said the guy had like long blondish hair. And the guy, Travis said he was just asking the guy questions like, where am I? What's going on? The guy didn't speak. He didn't really show any emotions. All this person, this entity did was kind of, you know, guide him back to the examine room again. And this time when he got back, the beings that were in there all looked humanoid now. And then they laid him back down and then he fell asleep. And then that's all he remembers. And the next thing he remembers is he wakes up, of course, back on Earth and he's on the side of a road. So that's completely different than the movie. Mm-hmm. It's not like really, it's not really that freaky. It's not scary. I don't know if it has something to do with, you know, the things they've talked about in other movies that aliens can like take different forms to make you more comfortable. Like Greg said, for contact, yeah. Maybe this was more contact.
Yeah.
But that's what he describes of seeing was that. The only other big difference he took from the documentary was, you know, it's been whatever 30 years since this happened for him. And he talks a lot about like why they took him. And I don't know if this is part of his coming to terms with what happened to him, but the way he describes it now is when he got out of the car, got out of the truck to see what was happening because he was curious, he started to run away and he doesn't know if he startled them on the ship and that's why they shot him because they were in defensive mode. And he says that when it shot him, he thinks it killed him. And then the aliens actually took him to bring him back to life because they didn't. It's almost like a hit and run. They didn't want to leave a dead body there. So the way he feels about it now is they saved his life.
Wow. That's
why they did it to him, to save him, which I mean, that's crazy. And that's definitely a way you can get cure your fear of what happened to you, is that's the reasoning you're going to say to yourself is that they saved me and it is a godsend and this and that. Yeah, but definitely after watching the documentary, I feel a lot better about the movie. I don't feel as scared because I'm going to try to tell myself that now when I watch this movie of like, they're just saving him. They're saving his life.
Jesus.
The only other thing that was really cool in the documentary was they did a field survey in 2014 of the site, and the trees in that site have grown 36 times larger than any other thing around it.
Damn.
And so like that's something that they talked about happens a lot in Chernobyl with radiation.
Damn.
So there's definitely radiation in this area that happened. And also the trees themselves, instead of being round, are more oval shaped and are facing inward towards a center source, which is fucking insane. I mean, there's so much evidence for this real story that happened that it's fucking crazy. I mean, the movie definitely takes it into a different degree and makes it a lot more creepy and gruesome. But but you can't really say that it didn't happen. You know, it's fucking crazy, though. Yeah.
Damn.
That's a good dig, man.
Yeah. All right. So, Graves, you can get back in your coffin now. I'm done. All right, man. I'll talk to you later. See ya.
Can I talk about?
All right. So, did I freak you out, Laura? Are you scared now?
Well, I'm like, how am I going to follow that now and like go back to the movie? Shit.
Well, we already did the movie. Oh, let's get to your grinding gears. Finally, we've been teasing it.
I can't follow you, man. I can't follow that.
Laura's like, this one guy, like, he turned his head really weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, let's get your drop, okay? That might follow it up. That'll be good.
Get drunker.
Richard Gere. Blink, 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 blink. Blink, 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 blink.
Okay, all right. Laura's slapping her balls. Okay, all right.
I'm slapping the balls. Slap, slap, slap. All right.
There you go. We're back. We're back. We're back, everybody. Okay. All right, Laura. So right. What grinded your gears?
Okay. So I've mentioned there have been quite a few things that have made me very angry in this movie. But the scene that really got me, because not only did it make me angry, but it also visually made me very confused and claustrophobic, is the scene right where Travis comes back. And so they go to pick him up. And as we've mentioned, he's naked and cold and traumatized. And so it's Travis and Mike and Travis's girlfriend and another buddy. And then there's two guys from...
Oh, the alien research guys?
Yeah. They all somehow go inside of, I think, a convenience store. And somehow, and maybe I'm wrong, but it looks like he ends up in a very tiny, narrow bathroom with one tiny window. And all five other people cram in. I mean, it is so claustrophobic. He is traumatized, newly back to Earth, butt naked, not speaking. And there are five people up in his face screaming at him, screaming at each other. And the two guys that are from the alien research have a microphone so close to his face visually. You can see he has to back away from the microphone. And I'm sorry, he screams at that point. And I'm like, he's not screaming because there's a fucking alien and he's scared. He's screaming because these people won't give him some fucking personal space. And I was just outraged. I know I'm outraged at the party and the wife and everyone treating Mike bad, but like, this is just common sense. You don't shove five people in a fucking bathroom and just like, he's naked. Give the guy a fucking minute. You guys... I was so upset at this scene and just visually like how claustrophobic it made me feel. This was legit. Like, I think when they were filming this guy probably was like, I need a minute because it was bad. Anyway, that's what got me the most.
So that's it. So have you not went in your own bathroom since you watched this movie? You refuse to go in your own bathroom?
No, I've got a pretty big bathroom, so it's okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, good,
I
mean, good.
I definitely locked the door because if God forbid, if anyone walked in, I would lose it. Did that bother you guys? Is it just me?
Yeah, I think it was just you. Let's get to a new like little like quick segment Greg had an idea for that Midsommar kind of inspired. So Greg, do you kind of want to talk about this little like quick segment you want to talk about?
In a lot of these movies, being a horror movie, a lot of it has to do with like survival and, you know, just confronting, negative emotions and scenarios. So I thought, it'd be cool. How many times are you sitting in front of a TV and you go, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. Or you opposite. Okay, you should totally do that. You need to do that. Are you crazy? So I thought we would come up with a few lessons learned from these movies that they present to very, very unique situations. And I thought we'd come up with some situations like, well, what have we learned from this movie? What should we do or what should we not do?
Okay. So do you want to go first, Greg? What things did you pick?
Yeah, this movie seemed to me the most obvious one. I'm sorry, I just got to say it. Don't ever leave the car. There's something happening out there. Stay in the car. The car is safe. That's your safe zone. Stay there. Number two, always carry a knife. You know, you can go stab some aliens in the face if you get close enough.
Okay. Nice. What about you, Laura? Did you come up with things you would do?
Yeah. All right. So the first one, maybe don't work until late at night out in the forest, out in the woods, and like on a long windy road. You know, that just seems like not a good situation you'd want to be driving back in.
Mm-hmm.
My next two are pretty sarcastic, but I'm going to say them anyway. Don't shove six grown ass men in a truck.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. And the third is, don't ever marry a woman named Katie fucking Rogers. She will ruin your life and give you no support and cause you to be a complete, you know, recluse out in the fucking wilderness for the rest of your life. So that's what I got to say about that.
Wow, that's true. Dang. Wow. Now I have to follow that, Laura. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Good job, you know? I guess for me, I definitely would say if anybody has anything traumatic happen to them, do not throw them a party, you know?
Yeah.
Don't throw them a party after that. At least wait a couple of days. At least maybe ask them or talk to them about it. maybe do that very, very minimal. Just kind of ask them. So I definitely say that's one of mine. I think my next one would be if you're in a fucking spaceship and you got abducted, leave the fucking keychain alone, man. Leave that keychain alone. You don't need your fucking snowflake keychain.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't need that shit, man. You don't need it. So leave the keychain. Yeah. Yeah, let's get to the Rotten Tomatoes scores here a bit. We'll kind of get to the end here. So Rotten Tomatoes for this movie, the audience score is 42%. And the critic score is 57%, a little bit better.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the consensus here is kind of like, I feel like it's going to be mostly what we think about, where this movie is very slow, not a lot's going on, and you really just remember 10 minutes of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to read a couple of these critic reviews, Laura, you pulled?
Oh, yeah. So I actually have one review, and it's a positive and a negative, which I really liked. And they're both from Roger Ebert from the Chicago Sun-Times. And so he says in the beginning of his review, the scenes inside the craft are really very good. They convincingly depict a reality I haven't seen in the movies before. And for once, I did believe that I was seeing something truly alien and not just a set director's daydream. Totally true, yeah. Describes the alien scene so well. But then he goes on and he says, but the movie's flaw is that there's not enough detail about the aliens, and the movie ends on an inconclusive and frustrating note, exactly, which I think we all completely agree with. So I thought that was great because one reviewer just nailed it, positive and the negative.
Yeah, no, that's exactly, I think, the feeling we all have from this movie, you know? Yeah. And I went through some of the audience reviews, kind of just scrolling through them or reading a lot. And it was very much exactly the same. People either really liked the alien stuff, so they gave it a positive review, or they just said it was boring and long-winded, and so they gave it a negative review. So that's kind of really the consensus of this movie. You know, this movie's built on 10 minutes. The 10 minutes are really creepy and fucked up. And if you think that's crazy, you're like, well, it's a really pretty good movie, you know? Actually, one person compared it to Mothman Prophecies, which I thought was interesting.
Really?
Yeah. They were just talking about the suspense in that movie and kind of the way that they like visually like only showed certain things. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't really think about that.
No way. Mothman was way more suspenseful than this movie.
Oh, I agree. I agree. To this date still, we're on like 20 episodes. Mothman is still the number one creepiest movie we've watched to me. That one fucking really freaked me out.
I don't know if it's the creepiest, but it definitely surprised me with how nervous I was about it.
Yeah, fucking Richard Gere got us.
Did dude, right?
Yeah. So let's get to our overall ratings here. So let's do 1 to 5 ratings. Let's do how many shots of syrup? So how many shots of syrup are you guys going to do? I've already taken 3 shots of my Fire Sky syrup mix. So we'll see what I give. But what do you think, Greg? How many shots of syrup are you giving it?
Yeah, if 2.5 shots is average, I'm going to say 3. I think it's definitely an average movie. And here's why. Like, Rob, we saw this when we were kids. They did so many things that were unique for the time, so many firsts. They were kind of like as far as I know, the first ones to have a really creepy scene about unaccounted time, you know, before Mothman did it, right? About so many days, how did I get here? They were kind of the first ones, in my understanding, to do a creepy, like, oh, well, this is based on a true story, before like Blair Witch, you know? They were kind of pioneers in a lot of ways. And I honestly didn't not like anything about the movie. Yeah, it was kind of slow, but it was like pretty enjoyable. And yeah, I'm gonna say three shots of old-fashioned syrup.
Yeah.
All right, Laura, how many shots of syrup are you giving this movie?
I'm giving it a 2.5. Similar to Pet Sematary, which I also gave a 2.5. I just feel like there were things I liked about it that were great, but then there were also so many things I didn't like about it. So it just kind of averages out for me.
Ooh, I want to see a crossover where they abduct the baby pimp. That'd be fucking cool.
Yeah. Can I just say, though, that fucking Greg, like, you gave this a higher rating than The Invitation. I can't get over it, because I look at our ratings and like the lowest rating besides Killer Clowns that Greg has ever given was Crawl. And then the next was The Invitation.
Dang.
And it's like, what?
Greg, I think you're going to need to revise that score pretty soon, so man. Too, I don't man. Know, man. That's pretty crazy, dude.
It really, I don't know why it bothers me. I think I still just don't accept your explanation.
I thought we talked about this last episode. I mean, I could think about it.
We did. I have a problem. I think maybe one day we're going to have a throwback episode where we only just talk about previous episodes. And this is going to be my grinding gear.
Oh, that's a good idea.
It's Greg not liking The Invitation.
I know. Speaking of higher ratings, Laura, what's Killer Clowns up to now? Is it up to 2 now?
Dude, you know what? Let me look to see what
Have you updated the board?
Ooh, so Greg and I both went up to a 1.
What? That's it? Oh my God.
You know what? Fuck it. I'm putting mine as a 2 at this point.
Yeah.
I'll give it a 2 as well.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. We did it. We did it, guys. All the listeners, we finally did it. Shout out to the Chiodo brothers. We did it, guys.
All right. Back to this movie now.
Oh yeah. I forgot. Yeah. Back to this movie. Yeah. So for me I'm definitely gonna give this like 2 different ratings here. For an overall movie perspective, I'm only giving it a 2 as an overall movie. I thought it was an okay movie, you know, great, not horrible. Like I said, I really just didn't like the ending. You know, we already talked about The Invitation and how great that ending was, and to me that gave it an extra point. This ending is so shitty. I fucking took away a point. I was like, fuck you. This ending sucks. You know?
Yeah.
So as a whole, the movie, I'm giving it a 2. For that 10 minutes of aliens, it's a fucking 10. You know? I am drinking a whole fucking gallon of syrup for that fucking 10 minutes of that alien shit. Because that, we talked about, it's the most realistic depiction of, I think, maybe what might shit look like. And it's so fucked up. So I don't know. That's not even like an average, Laura. I would just say put a 2 on the docket. But everybody out there know that those 10 minutes, if you want to just be fucking scared, you watch those 10 minutes and they're fucked up.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
Rob, do you feel kind of accomplished by being able to get through it? Like, thinking back to like episode 1 and thinking, I'm not going to watch this fucking movie like ever again. Like, what is it like to get through it?
It feels pretty good. It feels like it's off my back, you know, figuratively, literally. There's not like an alien abducting my shoulders, like nothing. It's off me, you know. It's off my shoulders. The weight, it's off my shoulders, you know. I'm not doing squats anymore, so I'm good. Yeah, so that's pretty much it for the episode this week. We're to the point where Greg's gonna, well, hopefully remember to reveal the movie. So Greg, what movie are we gonna be conjecturing next week?
I just want to preface it by saying I was inspired by this movie.
Oh, no!
I kind of liked the alien lore growing up. I watched X-Files a lot. I was so interested in like these types of mysteries, the things that are beyond what we can comprehend. So one of the things that I was so fascinated by as a kid that I used to read a lot about was the Bermuda Triangle. So there's a movie out there that I want us to review that we're going to next week. It's 2009's Triangle. And I don't think you guys have ever heard of it, but I've been wanting to watch it for a while. So it's totally off my list. But again, like, we'll see how it goes.
Oh, shit. This looks awesome. I'm into it.
Laura's ready. You're ready to go on the triangle?
I'm looking at the cast and the description and the poster. Yeah, it looks good.
Is there anybody big in it? Any big name actors?
Liam Hemsworth.
Ooh, okay.
Greg, you sounded way too excited.
Oh, Hemsworth, you say,
shit.
Yeah, so if anybody out there wants to email us in any movie recommendations that we've never heard of, like this triangle one, you can hit us up conjecturingpod@gmail. Twitter, Instagram @conjecturingpod. Also, you know, subscribe, rate, review our podcast wherever platform you're listening to. So this has been The Conjecturing. I've been Rob.
And Laura.
And Greg.
Yeah. Until next time, remember, horror is subjective, so conjecture away. See ya.
Bye.
See ya.
I'm slapping the balls. Slap, slap, slap.